All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, June 5th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is 62 degrees, gray and raining here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Brain Synthetic Biology. Real cyborgs, 1,500 CRISPR mutations, and AI. We had taken a good look at this project that they had called the quote-unquote Apollo Project of the Brain that was launched between IARPA, which is the DARPA-esque version of the CIA's DARPA called IARPA, Georgie Porgy Church, and public funding. They had been looking to reverse engineer the brain to find algorithms that allowed computers to think more like humans. Now, you would think with this type of technology being developed for the intelligence as well as for the Department of Defense communities, we should feel safe, right? It's going to keep criminals away. It's going to be able to model the human brain and figure out all the permutations of your pre-crime, things that could go wrong, those timelines that I've talked about many times. I mean, the human brain can do this. I am able to look at especially technologies or events or issues such as this one that we watch on a daily basis, and we really keep up on everything that's going on. As you start to get more and more facts lined up, it is very easy to look down different timelines and see the potential futures or outcomes of those grouping of events. But now this is what they are looking to be able to build into artificial intelligence, to be able to read their surroundings. We've talked about giving artificial intelligence senses, just like humans before. They were just input, but now with cameras and microphones and biosensors, they're able to detect not only what is going on around them, but they are also able to predict what the future outcome might be. We saw that Google's, I think it was the DeepMind, is that the AlphaGo? It's been playing the Go champion. This will be the second time that the AI now has had a contest and has won against a human and the best human at playing the game. We find out also, on top of all this, not only are all the big boys and the tech companies investing heavily, along with backing from all kinds of venture capitalist funding that are funded by rich tech billionaires, but we also find out that our federal institutions, again backed by taxpayer dollars, are pouring money into this very research, again, all under the guise of this brain initiative that Obama passed in the 21st Century Cures Act that was passed in December of 2016. It's going to give them carte blanche to, quote-unquote, accelerate cures, as that Fred Upton was peddling in his congressional video to sell that bill. But now, guess what, people? It's game on. They're going to make you and me and Nana and our future lineage of humanity the live real-time petri dish. There's no holds bar if it comes to curing what ails you. As soon as one of your loved ones steps up with an illness, someone pointed that out to me in one of the notes of the show. Like, oh, you might be against, you know, this technology until it's your child. And that's absolutely true. That's a dangling carrot. That's how they're manipulating us. Or until it's you. We've also discussed that. What happens? You know, I could sit here all day and squawk about this stuff. But what happens when I'm laying on my deathbed? And they say, oh, they come with a glowing platter of options. Oh, there are all these things that we could do. All you got to do is eat this banana and it'll fix everything. But you know, then we'll own your DNA. I saw some whacked out story that I posted on my personal page. I think actually I originally saw from LaVon, if you guys remember LaVon from Antimedia. She hasn't been on the air in a while, but I think LaVon posted this the other day, and I was like, oh, I knew it. We talked about this. We talked about who owns our physical body makeup once they start tinkering with what it means to be human. Once they start inserting, snipping and unsnipping, zipping and unzipping, zapping and unzapping different body parts to be able to manipulate how our biology works. And we've seen it already happen in the plant world. We saw what happened when they tried to patent nature. They said, no, I guess in one case they did. I told you that I ran across something really weird about, it's like the National Institute of Health, or yeah, I'm pretty sure that's who it was. Or maybe it was the USDA. It was one of them. Somebody patented something in George Church's name, like way, way back in the beginning when they started first messing around with manipulating genes. And it caused quite an uproar. I don't know if they've ever overturned that patent, but there were future cases that tried to piggyback on that and patent life. And they said, no. It cannot be something that is natural in the environment. It has to be something that has your intellectual property in it. As we're seeing more and more, this technology that didn't used to be quote-unquote technology like a car. Cars are now deemed as personal computing devices. We covered that a long time ago. And there was a battle in the courts about whether or not they were able to lock down a motor vehicle to not allow the purchaser to tinker with it because it was proprietary and any tinkering might actually cause some safety issues now as you accidentally mess up the operating system. And they wanted to do a digital rights management on a car. Well, we've seen it happen in plants. We're now seeing it happen in our personal computing devices. You know, in the old days, you used to have a lot more flexibility on the back end with your browsers and with your operating system. We found out in Windows 10, they got forced updates now. You can't turn those puppies off. You can maybe delay them for a certain number of hours. But not only do these updates become mandatory, but I saw something disturbing on one of these little mini Windows 10 boxes that we've been replacing servers as they blow up. My old 13, 14, 15-year-old servers finally going, that's all right. I mean, it's taken like a huge room full of heat and turned it just into these little tissue boxes. But the one thing that I saw when I was on one of the servers is that not only do these updates now come forced, you can set a time period, but you can't turn them off forever. Like you used to be able to. I do that on all my machines. Turn them off till I am absolutely forced. But I discovered that there's a feature in Windows 10 that will, and I'm pretty sure it was by default because I know I never set this. It shows that once a machine on the network of which we will all become a member of at some point, as part of the Internet of Things, those updates push out to one computer and then we'll go out to the rest of the network and act as the hive mind to push it to all of the other machines. Now, how disturbing is that? Because as we become more interconnected, and we're finding this everywhere, you know, there's hackers under every bed and in every closet. And it's soon going to be hackers in your pacemaker. They've been warning about that for a very long time. Of course, the DARPA Dan, no one is safe on the internet. Let's show you how easy it is to hack your car. You know, soon that's going to be us. As they are manipulating biology and they are tinkering with mixing silicone and carbon into an organism, we found out the National Science Foundation, IARPA, a corporation called Semiconductor Research Corporation, are working together as of May 18, 2017 on semiconductor synthetic biology computing. We've joked before about like DNA, Jabba the Hutt, storage devices in a big scary room down a long dark hallway. But guys, that isn't like a dystopian nightmare anymore. That's something that, I mean, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. I hate to say it, but that is something that could potentially be coming down the pike, as well as these living biological circuits that can respond to environment and have senses and be able to know their position in the universe so they can interact and react with humans. And what's going to happen? We found out they already had these new two synthetic proteins that they have added now to the DNA strand. We've had ATCG for as long as life has existed. And I am pretty sure that those are the only four amino acids that we are aware of in the universe. I don't know, maybe there's more, I'm sure. But at least that we are aware of as puny little humans. But don't worry about that. Good old Craig Venter. He was the one that developed the first synthetic organism. And they started messing around with DNA. They called these two new proteins X and Y, which I pointed out before, I personally think was a little bit of a Jedi mind trick calling it X and Y. They could have called it Q and Z. But if they called it Q and Z, it would draw attention to the fact that, whoops, they just literally created alien life. They've been able to create these organisms and have them reproduce now. And that's one of those moments in human history that probably will go out with a whimper that most will not remember, except for listeners to this show. So count yourselves fortunate in that fact. I mean, it really kind of pains me that what we are doing on this show is documenting the destruction of humanity 1.0. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there, a lot of transhumanists who I'm starting to see in the comments on my Facebook page and some of the YouTube and Twitter stuff and people that are subscribing that maybe this show's garnered just a little bit of attention. I hope so. From the other side, you know, before I was kind of afraid of it because I thought they were going to get real nasty with me, and they haven't. I want to say thank you to any transhumanists out there that actually listen to the show for at least having an open mind and listening to another perspective, because I know, I mean, maybe friends and family can tell me I'm tinfoil hat wearing, but you guys know, like, this stuff really is happening. And I'm coming from the perspective of someone who spent a lot of years in technology and was always pro merging with the machine until I was almost 40 and I had a kid. You know, I had that flash moment in my life where I was like, what am I doing all this for? What am I working so hard for? What am I acquiring all these things that we don't need for? Because I'm working so hard and selling all the moments of my life that I could be doing something else that's more meaningful. But I'm feeding the machine for a paycheck. And it really was pretty life-changing. I almost died 3 times in that next decade. One through childbirth and a few other bad situations that happened to me. It really kind of changes your perspective on things. And I got to tell you, I've gone from like a full out lefty merge with technology type to a complete, I don't know if I'd call myself far, far, far right, because I'm not staunch in a lot of things, but I definitely would consider myself more conservative at this point in my life. And, I have to say that we all should be taking pause. I don't care what your creed, race, religion, politics, sexual preference, color, region, even whether or not you're part of the species. I think we all should take pause. Just kind of reflect on what is happening on a grand scale right now. We are literally at a point. My mother's always like, oh, Jill, huh? You know, we've always said this through the ages that, oh, we are at a point now that we've never been at before. And it's true. It's happened all throughout history. We've improved our technology and we've gotten to points where, you know, we're always at a precipice. we have the newest, biggest, baddest, better, greatest technology to be able to destroy ourselves. With just, you know, now the spilling of a vial or the stepping into a bacteria that could potentially then come into contact with someone who might then become an incubator for something that then could, you know, who knows? I mean, guys, we're just at a point where there's so much going on, and they literally, we found out from a few different perspectives now, they literally are using real-time world, whether it be in the atmosphere, in our water supply, in our food. Oh, it's going to make you healthier now with probiotics. They don't really know what's going to happen. Oh, look, we're CRISPRing the planet. But that report just came out that there are over 1,500 CRISPR mutations in one experiment on mice that was to cure, which it did, congenital blindness. But there were 1,500 off-target mutations for things that the artificial intelligence, mind you, that they had scanning the genomes at some only targeted areas of the DNA to see whether or not anything had happened, but they had missed 1,500 mutations in a technology that they're already tinkering on human embryos and cancer cures for. It's very disturbing. So how many other things? You know, we've looked extensively at the Weiss Institute, Georgie Porgy Church, CRISPRing, the TARDIS, and some of the biological technology manufacturing and tweaking that he has been doing with funding from DARPA. George Church is also involved with IARPA. We had read about that. With the Brain Initiative. And they are now trying to reverse engineer the human brain utilizing neuronal barcoding. We read about that. It's some sort of, it was optogenetics that they were using to be able to create an artificial intelligence that thinks and acts and reacts more like humans. We read about some collaborations already where they are putting worm brains, rat brains, and then genetically modified E. coli into robots. And those robots are able to interact and react with their environment. They are able, I think we found out about that E. coli, which has got to be one of the most horrifying stories I think I've ever read to date. I know he's said that a few times, but they just keep getting more and more horrifying. They've been able to take a bacteria that does live natively in some quantities in your gut, but also can become virulent and pathogenic and transmissible if it gets into our food supply, potentially. I was reading about ephedrine and dopamine. And I don't remember what the third thing was. It was one of these bacteria that we were looking at. I think it was the Bacillus subtilis. Yes, it was. It was the Bacillus subtilis, which is a Bacillus bacteria, spore bacteria, that isn't easily killed. It can stay dormant for a very long time, but it can populate your gut. They are using it now with probiotics and all kinds of things. And it can go in all kinds of foods and has a long shelf life. There are a lot of questions as to whether or not Bacillus bacteria in your gut is a good thing or not. But one of the things I found in some research, and I don't know if it's still up here, but I think I might have sent it to Camille, so I might be able to dig up that link. That when E. coli comes into contact with Bacillus subtilis, one of the byproducts is to potentially be able to make E. coli more virulent. And I found that kind of interesting. So the fact that they are messing around with E. coli, we found out Georgie Porgy Church had fully re-engineered the genome of E. coli way back And they have been determining what portions of the genome were necessary for life and which weren't. And again, guys, I mean, this all comes back to we've always talked about the masters that are pulling the puppet strings that make the things work around the world. They're the ones that are orchestrating all of these events just for amusement, I think, sometimes. But we literally now have architects. So that's really what they are, architects of life. These are going to be engineers that will be able to make life with the push of a button, with the drag and drop. A few different things. I was just reading some story last night about this new cloud software. This company in Sweden is experimenting with genomes to be able to build blocks, little building blocks of life, and just make it with click, point and click, like an AutoCAD application. I mean, it's just horrifying to me as to where this is going to lead for our kids. But, you know, now we're looking at, you know, swab your cheek, send it in, find out whether or not you are related to the Queen of England. We've talked about that many different times. Well, I mentioned the story that Levon had posted a couple of days ago out of thinkprogress.org. Ancestry.com takes DNA ownership rights from customers and their relatives. A word to the wise, read the complete terms of service. Now, this is just the next stippy step, baby steps to a dystopic future that's happening just so slowly. And they're using all of these quote-unquote narratives, dangling carrots, to take you that next step so you're not afraid, Johnny. You know, it's going to cure cancer. You're going to be able to find out who you're related to, whether or not you have genetic diseases that you might have to get preemptive treatment to protect you from. It's going that way. But when you give up that swab, we already found out. Oh, I don't remember that girl's name, but Brain something. What's her channel? I'll put it in the notes when I find it again. She had been talking about just when you give cells to the doctor's office, you give blood, and you don't necessarily own that once it leaves your person. It can be used for research, and whatever the research is, you don't have any say over, and you might just get a letter someday. We find out that lady who had the aborted fetus back in the 50s that ended up in one of the vaccines, the MMR, I think, or one of them. And she got a letter years later from like the CDC or National Institute of Health, one of those organizations, saying, hey, congratulations, your DNA, your whatever, offspring's DNA has been saving millions of lives. So, you know, your pain didn't go in vain. We used it to create cell lines to, you know, inoculate millions against this killer disease, measles or whatever, measles, mumps, and rubella, ones that, you know, every child used to get. But now we've spread your lineage. And the scary thing is, as this technology starts improving and they start understanding more how everything we consume and things that are in our environment and even our emotional contacts and travesties in our lives, the junk food that we eat, the alcohol we ingest, the pollution we breathe, all has some sort of influence, whether it's flipping a switch on or off, or if it's pushing an illness, an inflammation, the root of all illness in our bodies, one way or another, to then cause a potential cascade of biological mechanisms to occur that maybe then give you a cancer. You know, we don't realize the intricacies of this grand ecosystem that we are a part of, that they right now are learning as clumsy teens would, how to manipulate And, you know, they all have delusions of grandeur. That's the big problem here. You know, I don't say that this technology is necessarily bad, but we always have to remember that things such as CRISPR and being utilized in, you know, like gene drives, that was Georgie Porgy and Church and Billy Gates' wet dream to be able to spread a man-made genetic quote-unquote defect through an entire population within a single generation. You know, scientists are terming that gene drives an extinction machine because they are. And when we start then thinking about how as they are decoding the genomes of all living species and living things, how then, you know, we could have somebody sitting as judge and jury determining which genes are quote-unquote good genes and which genes are quote-unquote bad genes. You know, maybe somebody with a quote-unquote bad gene might have X, Y, and Z trait. But are those traits life-threatening? Are those traits just anomalies that allow that living organism who owns those traits to maybe operate outside of parameters, just a little bit off-skew, but maybe that off-skewedness, what leads them to a destiny to, you know, I don't know, save humanity from the evil that is descending upon them right now? This ownership of the building blocks of what makes you a living organism. And I really hate to say it, people, but I really think that that is coming in our future as they offer us the key to save us from the next grand pandemic. And we found out they rolled out Billy Gates to say that 30 million people could die within 1 year in our next grand quote-unquote pandemic, whether accidental or on purpose. You know that this new shape-shifting immune system that they are working on, some of these living therapeutics that, again, Bill Melinda Gates Foundation is also invested in, this genetically modified CRISPRed bacteria that'll fix everything that ails you and produce even drugs inside of you, some newfangled antibiotic that we haven't quite thought of yet. If you don't take it, if you don't get quote-unquote modified to save you from this next scourge that has been released upon the planet, well then, Jenny, your choice is either to comply or to die. And I think that's the decision they're going to give us. And once we have complied, there's no getting that out of our DNA. There's no getting that genetic change rolled back. There's no takebacks once you've accepted the new architects of life. This really is what nightmares are made of. And I don't know how to defend against it, guys. And we need to put our heads together and to come up with something. And what about some sort of ultrasonic sound barrier, you know, that maybe only the dogs could hear? So every time you walk down the street, all the neighborhood dogs might howl at you. But you'll be able to have an invisible bio suit. You can breathe through it. People could touch you through it. But maybe it would be tuned to keep out all kinds of bad bacteria. I don't know. I'm sure we got smarty pants listeners out there. There's a million-dollar dumb idea. Run with it and then call me. Let me know. I will be your prototype tester. But, you know, this is really horrifying. So now we find out. Here's my little next dot on the timeline that is leading me to this conclusion of our genetic code being just another piece of software running on a device. We will be a personal computing device with a capital P. But we will just have a DNA software or genome software. We'll have to get forced updates. Downloading. You'd be offline for 5 minutes there, Johnny. Just sit still. Doesn't hurt a bit. You close your eyes when you power back up. Everything is in higher definition than it was before. And you got some new sensations. Here, smell it, Johnny. It all smells like rainbows. I mean, as they start cracking all of the secrets of life, and they are coming at it from every direction, not just genomic, but also from neuronal, sensational, as in our sensations. And now they're literally engineering life on the fly. They are able to create life on a chip. That was another project that the Weiss Institute worked with DARPA funding to try to create human biological systems on a chip that they can manipulate and test things on just to see what would happen. Don't worry about it. There were no humans hurt in this experiment. Oh, so it's all right then. I mean, again, double-edged sword. When we read that story from 1982 from the guy that was heading up Fort Detrick, Maryland, our former quote-unquote biowarfare division, but he was only heading up the defensive division that was maintained after Nixon inked that agreement to get rid of biological and chemical warfare agents. They still continued that research, and even that general had said that the thing that we always need to remember is that even though we can come up with miraculous cures, these are still miraculous ways to kill you as well. It's always the Department of Defense that is behind this. We also found out, interestingly enough, that that former facility, and maybe even the scientists that were at that facility, turned to civilian work, and I will put quotation marks around that. They turned that Fort Detrick, Maryland, large majority of it, facility that had been dedicated to the war machine and biological warfare into, wait for it, a cancer research institute. Now, what I find really interesting about that is that, like we've said before, when we first started talking about some of this insane, quote-unquote, nanobot in your blood technology, which we found out, we used to think they were little mini tin can nanobot robots, but no, they were actually some sort of either E. coli or bacillus bacteria with flagella that have been programmed with their own little cellular language or CRISPR'd to not only perform some sort of algorithm that they've programmed into it, but also deliver killer payloads to a destination to then kill the tumors. And there's a bunch of different ways that they have figured out how to do this. But these little flagellal, say that five times fast, flagellal motors that they have been building has been going on for a long time. It's part of their little nano crossover into biology. Look it up, nanomotors or flagellal motors. There's some National Institute of Health documentation, some IEEE stuff that's out there. This is a real thing. Integrating biology and technology is a very real thing. And they're getting to this level where we can't see it, hear it, smell it, taste it. Remember, just because you can't does not mean it's not true. Does not mean it's not there. Just means that our puny senses, our puny human senses, can't see it. So, all right, I digress so many times. So back to now losing ownership of our own living organism, our own DNA. So Ancestry.com takes ownership of your DNA from customers and their relatives. Do not use the Ancestry DNA testing service without actually reading the Ancestry.com terms of service and privacy policy. According to these legal contracts, you do still own your DNA, but so does Ancestry.com. So maybe you'll get paid for it. Somebody I don't know if it was someone in chat or this is one of my friends when we were talking about this. Someone had made kind of a jesting comments, but maybe at some point in the future when there are no more jobs because the AI is taking them all, maybe you will earn your universal basic income by providing some of your bodily fluids, a little swab, eat this little pill or this banana, Johnny, to earn your keep, to make you significant as a part of a grand experiment. Maybe you are part of this part of humanity and they will evolve each of us into different branches of future life with different traits as another grand experiment to then seed us out on other planetary bodies and moons that they are discovering could potentially be habitable once they have terraformed them with DARPA's Terraforming Mars project. It's pretty frightening perspective. Well, there are three significant provisions in the Ancestry DNA privacy policy in terms of service to consider on behalf of yourself and your genetic relatives. One, the perpetual royalty-free worldwide license to use your DNA. So check that box, Johnny. You now have become part of a research project that you will never see the proceeds from. Number two, the warning that DNA information may be used, quote, against you or a genetic relative. And then number three, your waiver of all legal rights. That's pretty scary. So it isn't as bad as I thought yet. They are not demanding any type of money from you, but in the future, they might want your cash for your subscription to be able to protect you against the viral threats to the Internet of Things, of which you will become a part. For the price of $99, Ancestry DNA will take a sample of your saliva off your hands. It will then give customers an analysis of their genetic ethnicity and a list of potential relatives identified by genetic matching. That could be dangerous. Ancestry.com, on the other hand, gets free ownership of your genetic information forever. Technically, Ancestry.com will own your DNA even after you're dead. Hey, I got to tell you a little story here. Talk about a chip off the old block. My little munchkin said to me the other day, she says, Mom, I want something in my will. She says, I wanted to say that after I am gone, that only I own the rights to my DNA and my image. So they can't ever make some sort of computer robot of me. I was like, you know what, sweetie? That's actually a really good idea. Maybe we should all put that in a will somewhere. Maybe we petition that. You know, I had read a story back a while ago about Robin Williams. He was always one of my favorites growing up, back from the days of Mork from Mork. I always appreciated him. If you'd ever seen any of his stand-up comedy, man, his brain worked at, it operated at a frequency that most of us could never even dream of attaining. It just worked so fast and his dots connected just on such a crazy level that you really had to think hard, but you were laughing too hard to do that while you were listening to him. But I always liked Robin Williams, but I read something after he passed away that he actually had something in his will about them not ever using like his likeness to create a movie of him after he was gone. Unlike Carrie Fisher, which I had read that part of one of the new Star Wars movies, they are integrating her into the film, even though she's dead. And I don't know if it's going to be full CGI or whatever they were doing, but if you have an interest in that, look that up. I'll see if I can find a link to that later. So anyway, so you still own, apparently, your DNA, but so does Ancestry.com. Specifically, by submitting DNA to the Ancestry DNA database, you agree to, quote, grant them and the Ancestry group of companies a perpetual, royalty-free, worldwide transferable license to use your DNA and any DNA you submit for any person for whom you obtained legal authorization as described in this agreement. and to use, host, sublicense, and distribute the resulting analysis to the extent, in the form, or context that we deem appropriate on or through any media, any medium, and with any technology or devices now known or hereafter developed or discovered. Oh my God. Like, they literally are saying that they could take you, send you to a clone factory in China, and have you reproduced to be used as a sex doll in the Philippines. I mean, what? That isn't what they're saying, but I guess that is what they're saying. They could use you, and what I'd love to see what actually, quote unquote, you obtained legal authorization from anyone else you submitted. Like, hey, mom, here, why don't you spit into this? We're going to find out who we're related to. And your mom says, okay. She spits into the vial. Is that legal consent? Because she spit into the vial and gave it to you? I don't know. But this, we should be very afraid of this, guys. I warned you about these DNA tests and how this was totally not what you wanted to do. You did not want to get into the database and look at. I mean, if giving up your data just online and how they follow you with cookies and they're able to sell you to a broker and all your interests and even opening microphones on your desktop and recording what is going on in the ambient background noise in your room, they can sell to advertisers. Just imagine what they could do with your DNA. They could even make face masks of random people. Remember that woman in New York City who was collecting gum and cigarette butts from around the city? And then she was a geneticist or something, or biologist, and she was creating likenesses based on the software that was able to look at certain traits in the DNA and recreate an actual human face. And then she was having them 3D printed into masks that then she was selling as artwork. Like, could you imagine? Your face could be sold on Amazon for $29.95. Ghosts of the street or something. It's just horrifying. Anyway, basically, Ancestry.com gets to use or distribute your DNA for any research or commercial purpose. Ding! It decides and does not have to pay you or your heirs a dime. Furthermore, Ancestry.com takes this royalty-free license in perpetuity, which means for all time, or maybe perpetuity, and it can distribute the results of your DNA test anywhere in the world and with any technology that exists or will ever exist or be invented. And with a single contractual provision, customers are granting Ancestry.com broadest possible rights to its own to exploit their genetic information. The Ancestry.com DNA terms also requires customers to confirm that, quote, you understand that providing us any DNA, you acquire no rights in any research or commercial products that may be developed by Ancestry DNA that may relate to or otherwise embody your DNA. Essentially, you still own your DNA, but so does Ancestry.com, and you can commercialize your own DNA for money. But Ancestry.com is also allowed to monetize your DNA for millions of dollars and does not have to compensate you. How is this being allowed? Where is Congress passing laws to stop this very thing? Oh, wait. They're trying to protect you from the hackers under your bed and in your closet and in Russia, but not from companies that are preying on you and your naivety to make millions of dollars off of something you can never get back. Secondly, if a customer withdraws their consent, Ancestry.com will take 30 days to cease using your data for research. Well, that's good to know that at least there's a consent withdrawal. I think that would be a fun petition to point this out to the public and then to get people to start withdrawing and find a really easy way. So any 7-second attention span American could just push a button and withdraw their consent from the company that is making millions of dollars on them, potentially now, forever, and in the future. Customers must jump through additional hoops if they want their DNA sample destroyed or their data deleted from Ancestry DNA products and services. Oh, I'm going to figure out how to do this, guys. I'm going to do it. I want to. I think this would like be a total poison dart. Pachoo! Real tiny and maybe potentially undetectable if it's an ice dart. And it melts. We've read all about those. That heart attack gun from the CIA, I think. But I think that'll be a really good one. And I think people don't have a clue. And I can guarantee you that there are millions of people who have done this and have no idea that they have just sold themselves and their future progeny down the river. Another section of the story, and this wasn't what I was going to spend the whole show on, but it'll be a good launching point for tomorrow. Warning that DNA information may be, quote, used against you or a genetic relative. What? Oh, yes, yes, yes. The Ancestry.com DNA testing service promises to analyze approximately 700,000 genetic markers. And according to Ancestry.com, the service, quote, combines advanced DNA science with the world's largest online family history resource to predict your genetic ethnicity and to help you find new family connections, unquote. Guys, you know, if you really start thinking about in 700,000 genetic markers, how many different gene sequences that they have already identified as being quote unquote good genes and quote unquote bad genes, and how they've analyzed those genes. They have all kinds of smarty pants AI like Dr. Watson that is learning genetics. And we'll be able to determine, I just saw the other day, I don't know if it was here or if I have it on the computer upstairs from the weekends, but they already had an artificial intelligence in England, in the UK, that was able to look at genetic sequencing of patients in hospital and determine what their future lifespan was going to be based upon the genetic markers at that point in time that they were sequenced. I mean, you guys forget, well, maybe you don't, but some people forget this is only the beginning. Like when people look at me, and my husband is one of them. Oh, Joel. I mean, I get that all the time. I spent the weekend, my sister was in town. So I spent the weekend with my family again in that little house with all of us and the squawking parrot and the kid and my dad and just all the, you know, bickering and the loud television. It just it gets to be a lot, but we did get to ground ourselves this weekend. We actually went to the beach. It was very lovely. It was mid to high 70s and sunny. So we took a little road trip, and I got to sit in the sand and get all buggy and play with slate and put my feet in the water. So it was kind of nice. But, yeah, after a weekend with the family, oh, and, you know, this is a good tie into this. I got to tell you. They're absolutely talk about like your genetic relative. There actually is a lot of genetic connection in family members. We had how many generations? 1, 2, 3 generations all in the same house. And you could definitely see there was a little genetic connection there. It was enough to make somebody hear circus music in their heads. But anyway, with 700,000 genetic markers, I could guarantee you that they have already determined what genetic markers are quote-unquote good genetic markers and which ones are quote-unquote bad and which ones they want to target in some of their new research that is going on in the background. I can guarantee you Ancestry DNA is doing the same sorts of things that 23andMe are doing, where they will sell access to their genetic database that you have given them free access to, check that box, Jenny, to scientists and universities and mad science labs around the world for $29.95 for a monthly subscription fee to be able to utilize your genetic information in research. They're figuring out how to delete things and how to add things and what is necessary for life and what is not and what is good, quote, and what is bad, quote, for the future of human 2.0. The implications of what is going on here is beyond disturbing. And I guess I wasn't going to go here at all today, but I guess I am going to. Facebook was blocking me from posting this morning, and this probably did not feed out to the Twitter feed for Before the First Cup, which if you've never been there, go there, twitter.com/Jule, J-U-L-E, the letter E, Stan, one, the number one. That is the Before the First Cup Twitter feeds from Facebook. And the story this morning was out of Bloomberg, which I found kind of interesting, about Jennifer Doudna. We talked about Jennifer Doudna quite a number of times on the show. She was one of the quote-unquote co-founders, and I'm going to call her that because apparently the other team, Jennifer Doudna is from Berkeley, the other team from Weiss Institute and Harvard, MIT, which would include Georgie Porgy Church and his clan, have been working on a parallel line of experimentation where they discovered CRISPR right about the same time, kind of couple different ways, but with the same end result. They both tried to patent it. They both pointed fingers at each other. And it said, no, I did it first. And it went to court. Court awarded Georgie Porgy Church's team, who is working with DARPA and the DOD, the ownership rights to CRISPR as Adidas Medicine, and that is the incubator startup that spun out of taxpayer-funded projects that had gone to create some of these technologies. And I don't know if they actually was taxpayer-funded DARPA DOD for CRISPR, but let's just say that their scientific team is doing enough projects with the DOD that it has become very lucrative for that team to have the patent ownership rights tag to a technology such as CRISPR. But we found out on Friday that, whoops, there was a team out of Columbia, I believe. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. But we read it on Friday that it found in treating mice for a genetic blindness disorder, something that they had already been tinkering with some human children to try to cure by CRISPRing their genome and snipping out that bad code that caused the genetic blindness, that there were 1,500 off-target gene mutations that had happened in those mice that they had never detected before, whether accidentally or on purpose, with CRISPR. So this really is causing this quote-unquote boon in a disruptive technology that was about ready to overtake genetics and provide every cure under the sun for humans. It's really shown a chink in the armor, and I don't think it's going to stop that train. Like I said on Friday, I think if you wanted to invest in something and invest in the destruction of the human race, the stock prices probably took a hit. And I can guarantee you they won't forever stay down. But listen to this. So Jennifer Doudna has been at odds with Georgie Porgy Church's team at the Weiss Institute. Jennifer Doudna's company, and I never remember the name of it, but they also formed a startup out of their version of the CRISPR technology. They had already been on record stating that they weren't going to do any type of editing that would affect the germline, that they were going to have a more ethical view on what this technology means to the future of humanity. Well, in the story that Facebook was giving me trouble posting last night, and I had to do it a special way with an image as opposed to a link, this was titled, "One of CRISPR's Creators," and this would be Jennifer Doudna, "Faces Her Fears." In A Crack in Creation, which apparently is her memoirs, Jennifer Doudna wrestles with her role in inventing the gene editing tool and the implications of it. In terms of impact on the future of the human race, and this is out of Bloomberg Businessweek, No invention in this still young century may measure up to the gene editing tool of CRISPR. Clustered regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, more affectionately known as CRISPR, existed in nature as an antiviral defense system in bacteria, and they've been using in some of the experimentation E. coli thing. And when Jennifer Doudna, a microbiologist at the University of California, Berkeley, as well as a French researcher named Emmanuel Charpentier, co-published the first findings showing that CRISPR interacting with a protein called Cas9 could edit the genes of a bacterial cell. When people refer to CRISPR now, they just talk about wiping out diseases, resurrecting woolly mammoths, ding, again, Georgie Purgy Church, and fashioning designer babies. But such implications fascinate and torment Jennifer Doudna. Again, she's one of those scientists who created something that she sees could very potentially be used way beyond what she ever imagined the implications could be. And she is writing about them movingly with Samuel Sternberg, who is a biochemist and former research colleague, in a book called A Crack in Creation, Gene Editing, and the Unthinkable Power to Control Evolution. Remember, we've talked about Georgie Porgy Church and his whole program about de-extinction and his discussion about self-directed evolution. That is actually what is happening, guys, and that is how they are going to use it. And even one of the creators of the technology is afraid. Doudna's memoir is partially an attempt to sustain her voice in the debate over CRISPR's practical and less practical uses, and partly as an effort to secure her legacy. Well, we talked about 1,500 genetic mutations in one experiment. What's that going to do with mutant bacteria? All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Monday. Lonnie Clark is up next. There's All Kinds Radio tonight, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everyone, take care.
Gibson, and I am the host of Anti-Media Radio on YTY.